Welcome to the Antimatter Radio Show. This is the third edition of this show. I apologize for not being here last week and having to have a rerun. Something came up. I'd like to welcome any new listeners who heard me on the Alex Jones Show yesterday or heard me on Kevin Barrett's Truth Jihad Show Saturday night. If you'd like to listen, if any of you missed those shows and like to listen to them, this show and any other shows I've done are on. If you just go to antimatterradio.com, you can listen to all the archived shows. I'm still putting up some of the archives from the 2006 and 2008 shows I've done, and those will get up through time. But I think many of you would like the two shows I did recently, the Alex Jones Show yesterday and then Saturday, the Truth Jihad Show. That show is particularly amazing with Kevin Barrett. He really pushed me to go in every direction, I'm happy to say. The first edition of this show and the second edition, the first edition we talked about human origins, and the second edition we also did, and we basically discussed evolution and how the theory of evolution, keyword there is theory, of evolution is a really a sort of a bogus theory. It's non-scientific is what it is. It's all theoretical with extremely scant evidence, and it's basically just a theory that's pushed through by big money and big media. And the academics sort of have to follow along. They can't go against evolutionary theory if they want to get a job in academia. Their research has to conform to it and so forth. But we found out, I see on a show like this, or on the Alex Jones Show, or you know, any other shows I've been on, and a lot of the other shows on BBS here, like Dr. Lynn Horowitz coming up later tonight, you know, we don't have that censorship. We can say whatever we want. And if anybody has a problem with that, anybody in government or whatever, well, then... there's nothing they can do about it, I'm happy to say. To use the Founding Fathers' term, one of our inalienable rights is freedom of speech, just like freedom of self-protection, property, and so forth, pursuit of happiness. So it's only when you have a situation where free speech is gone, where you have thought control and people coming up with bogus theories like evolution. So it's just to sum up in 10 seconds what we discussed in the first two shows. We found out that the evidence, supposed evidence in the DNA and in the fossil record for evolution is not there. It's ridiculous that academics all go along with this. And if you want to hear all the details on that, all the references I gave and so forth, you have to go listen to those two shows. And basically where we left off in the second show was wondering, what in the world are humans then? Because sort of most of us are just conditioned to this idea of believing that we're just, you know, animals, and we evolved through time to become humans, and there's nothing very special about us. We're just kind of like, you know, super chimpanzees or something. But when you get that out of your mind and you start to realize, you know, I don't know where I come from. I don't know what's created me. Why am I here? What am I made? You start to wonder, what am I made of? What is my purpose? My destiny? That's sort of where we left off in the last show. And I promised that in this show we would start discussing a bit of human origins. Actually, I'm working on a book right now. I think the title of it's going to be called The Sky Creatures. I'm talking to some if I get a publisher for it, I'm going to really plow through it and finish it up over the summer. So I should know that probably in a couple of days. But the basis of that book is it's two parts. What is ultimate reality and consciousness is sort of like the same question. And then the other part of it is where do humans come from? And the where do humans come from is what I promised we would discuss on this show. At the end of the last show, I said we would get moving on that. And basically, what you have to do is follow the evidence in any pursuit. You have to follow evidence. What is evidence? Evidence is what you can witness in your experience. So if you go into a closet and pray for 12 hours, and all of a sudden you have a vision of angels or of God, or of dragons or something, then you have some sort of evidence to you that these things exist because they have appeared in your consciousness. Just like when you see a school bus drive by sometime, you have an experience of a school bus, so therefore you have evidence that it exists. Now, of course, there are errors that are made by consciousness. Now, the yellow of the school bus really isn't there, as we discussed, I think, on show number 2. That's sort of a trick of an illusion that the eyes play on us. And, you know, in the ultimate particle reality that composes the universe, there is no colors. There are no things like that. And so in that case, you're seeing something with the yellow. When you see the yellow of the school bus, you're seeing something that doesn't exist. So it's amazing. You can just look right out in front of you right now and look at, you know, everything that you see is going to be colorful. It's one of the primary ways you experience the world is through color. You could know that none of those colors exist. You are having an empirical experience of something that's not there. It's quite amazing. And also the case with praying in the closet for 12 hours, you could, you know, it could be a hallucination that you have. But usually, this is a little bit nebulous, but it's the best we have as humans. Usually the person has to just, when they have an experience, they have to perform skepticism. They have to doubt with all of their energy the experience. And if they can't refute it, if they can't destroy the experience, if they can't find holes in it, then they have pretty good evidence to think that the experience is real. So if you are having an experience of the yellow of the school bus like that I just referred to, well, it's pretty easy to refute that. If we just have some skepticism, we could say, okay, well, let's question what is the yellow made of? And then we say, oh, well, let's, you know, rip it apart into its little constituents. And you go all the way down to the particle level, and then there's no yellow there anymore. So the yellow that you see at the level of the school bus is not there at the level of the tiny level of the subatomic particles. So you have to wonder, you know, where does the yellow come from? If there's no yellow at the ultimate level of the base constituents, then the yellow can't be composed out of those things. So the yellow has to be composed by your mind. So now all of you should think about that. I just, the issue I'm bringing up is one of the most profound issues in the history of philosophy. And let me just sum it up in simple terms. The reality is composed of non-physical particles, which have no color, and they actually have no size or any duration of time either, but that's another issue I don't have time to get into right now. And the particles, if they don't have color, they can't compose anything with color. You can't get color from non-color. So that means that if you're seeing any colors in your experience right now, such as a yellow school bus, then it's not coming from reality. It's coming from you. Your mind is making it up. So that would mean then, since you experience reality primarily in terms of colorfulness everywhere, just anywhere you look at physical reality, that means that you're inventing physical reality to an enormous degree. You can give the same arguments for surface extension. Like if you reach out your hand and touch anything, you're feeling a surface. That's extension. The subatomic particles, the quantum atoms, as you can call them, that exist, don't have surface. They don't have extension. They have no size. So this leads to the same question. How can you get something that has, how can you, if the school bus, you can reach out and touch the yellow school bus and feel its surface, where does that surface come from? Because if you're looking at from the perspective of the subatomic particles, quantum atoms, the extensionless quantum atoms like quarks and electrons and muons and so forth, those don't have surface. So where you can't add up surfaceless items to get surface. That's like saying 0 plus 0 plus 0 plus 0 equals greater than 0, which is a mathematical absurdity, of course, an impossibility. So interestingly, extension as well. If you look out into your reality, look at extendedness everywhere. You know, like I've got books in front of me right now. I'm feeling a book right here. That feeling is an empirical experience, but it is an illusion. Okay, and quantum physics has shown us this, and also the world religions have shown us this. If any of you go to my website, my primary website, Abstract Atom, atomadam.com, atomadam.com. You can go to my resumes area and look at the academic resume called the CV, and you'll see some articles I published, one of which is published in the Buddhist Journal of Philosophy in India in 2005, I think it was. And I discuss in there how the ancient Buddhists back way back in 2000 AD, 700, or sorry, 200 AD, 700 AD, and so forth, they knew everything that the quantum physicists knew today. They knew that reality was composed of non-physical tiny bits of energy. Those tiny bits were, they did not have any parts. They were true atoms, atoms in the true sense of the word. And they flashed in and out of existence and did not exist through time. And therefore, reality of surface and color that we see, the physical reality, is simply not there. You are making it up in your consciousness. Now, it is. This is one of the most profound things I will ever be able to say in this radio show or anywhere, any time in my life. And let me sum it up as follows. How could the ancient Buddhists in India have known what the quantum physicists just discovered with all their high-tech equipment in the last few decades? And the answer is, as I went over in detail in show number one 4 weeks ago, the answer is because religion and religious experience, spiritual consciousness, and it, at its deepest level, reveals ultimate reality to you, just as quantum physics is revealing ultimate reality to us. And those in quantum physics and the most profound religious experience, such as what the Buddhists call nirvana, or the Zen Buddhists call satori, these things are in complete agreement to an astounding degree. And I think it's shocking, but I think I'm one of the first people to really point this out, that the quantum physicists discovered what the Buddhists of India discovered in, you know, 2500 AD. I'm really not sure why I would be the first one to discover this. In fact, I don't think I did. I think there's an academic named, his name is pronounced Trubetsky, but it looks, it's a Russian name. It's got, you know, four consonants at the beginning. You'd have to look up his book called Buddhist Logic, which I cannot recommend enough if you're interested in this. Look, I would read, start reading volume one of that if you're interested. But he seemed to be on to the suspicion that quantum physics was describing the exact same thing. But he was early in the game. He wrote those books decades ago when quantum physics was just going on. He really didn't get into it much. It just was like a suspicion of his. I get into it in specific detail in some of my academic works. I'm, of course, now dropped out of the academic world. I couldn't really take it for reasons I discussed on previous shows and on the Alex Jones show yesterday. But anyways, just to repeat, the fact that there's so much that we can learn about ourselves and about reality when we just simply consider the fact that quantum physics has discovered exactly what the Buddhists discovered in the first 1,000 years A.D. It's unbelievable. It shows us what we are. It shows us that our consciousness is not what we think it is. Our consciousness is not meant for picking up physical items. It's not meant for apprehending physical reality, which is what most of us are doing. That's called ego consciousness. That's a consciousness filled with misery and sorrow, according to basically all the religions say that. They all say you should attain, you should strive for higher consciousness, you should strive for ultimate reality, you should strive to get your consciousness in contact with it. You know, in Christianity, you're supposed to pray to get in contact with the Holy Spirit and with God, the light, that Jesus is on the light of the world. In Buddhism, similarly, you are to meditate, and what you want to get in contact with, you want to get your consciousness to see its unification with and its identity and indistinguishability from the light of ultimate reality that composes and is everything everywhere. And, you know, so forth with the other religions like Hinduism with Brahman and the Muslims and, you know, Sufism with the light of God and so forth. So the fact that our consciousness can tell us what the most profound scientific discoveries have told us is so wonderful that this is the case. It shows us that there, that our true consciousness is not meant for man. This is so much to say here. I'm trying to figure out exactly where to go here. There's just a lot to say. Let me first say one thing. I said on, if you go back and listen to the show on Saturday that I had with the Truth Jihad show with Kevin Barrett, there was a wonderful part where he and I were talking about how physical reality simply doesn't make any sense. Okay, and if you take something like, we were discussing how if you shoot a bullet, the bullet, you can take pictures of it with it, certain cameras that take a really quick picture, the shortest time duration, and it'll show the bullet as being still. Okay, so then the question arises, well, I thought, you know, you would think of the bullet as moving. Why are you taking pictures of it as being still? And the answer is because motion comes out of stillness. The bullet is at one place and then another and another, and each place it's at is still. So motion is stillness. But now think about that. If you say motion is stillness, that doesn't make any sense. That's a contradiction. That's like saying the dog is the cat, or I'm sitting while I'm standing. These are absurdities. They don't make it. They can't exist in reality. Contradictions can't exist. Like a contradiction, for example, is a round square. That doesn't. You can't even think about that. It doesn't even make any sense. Okay, so to say that the bullet is moving through because of stillness is a contradiction. That basically tells us that physical reality, that the physical reality we all think is so real, isn't quite there as we think it is, and there's something wrong with our way of witnessing reality. Now, any motion, I don't need to talk about a bullet. That's just an extreme example. Any motion is susceptible to the same philosophical attack that I just gave. And we just also discussed colors. Colors don't make any sense because they're composed of non-color, the subatomic reality. Does that make any sense? Of course not. So color, you have to throw that away too. It doesn't exist. Also, if you don't have motion, you don't have time. Okay, if we throw motion away because of the bullet example we just gave, we throw time away as well. And also with surface extendedness, we just talked about that. The subatomic particles are irreducible, sizeless bits of energy. So sizeless entities don't have a surface extension, so you can't add them up to get surface extension. So size doesn't make any sense either. So basically, every single aspect of our physical experience that we have, motion, time, surface extendedness, and color, none of these make any sense. There's not a single philosopher in the world that can explain these simple things. And the Greek philosophers, as one example, many other philosophers, groups of philosophers also discuss this. The Greek philosophers, for example, said, well, if we can't describe any of these things, and if we try to describe them, we just run into contradictions. Well, then none of them exist. And reality that we see with our eyes has to be some sort of illusion. Now, if you're interested, I have a whole article I've published in Academics, a very carefully written academic article of 170 or so pages. And you can read it. You can either buy it or read it for free on my website. If you want to read it for free, just go to my website and look up writings. Go to in resume. Look at the first resume on the page. When you click there, it's a CV and academic CV. And go to a paper that I published in 2007 called Myriological Nihilism. Okay, you want to read that. That'll tell you basically everything I've discussed so far in this show is discussed in painstaking and glorious detail in that article. And basically it comes, if you want also you can buy, get a nice book form of it. You can buy that. I think it's just a couple bucks. And there's a link to that right on my website in the books part on the left hand side. But you can of course read it for free. You don't have to. I just wanted it in both of those forms for whatever people wanted to do. So to sum it up is to reiterate what I just said. Physical reality doesn't make any sense. And that's the whole point of this show. That's why this show is called the Anti-Matter Radio Show. It's because I was onto this way back in 2000, well, really into the 1990s with my religious meditation. I specifically carry out Soto Zen meditation. And that is a kind of meditation that is very powerful, and it quickly gets you to see that matter isn't there. What we think we see with our eyes isn't real. There's something far more powerful, far more glorious and happy. And matter is nothing. It's really just a trick of consciousness. So when you look into the eyes of your child, and I know that they look beautiful to you, but really, and that's great. Don't change how you feel about that. But really, ultimately, they are something bigger, something much more powerful, something much more spectacular than just their the skin bag that of their body. Okay, so I mean, we don't want to. I mean, this is called the Anti-Matter Radio Show. We don't want to go around and reject material reality just for the sake of rejecting material reality. What we want to do is we want to see that material reality doesn't exist. So if you think it's just a philosophical principle or an idea that, oh, material reality doesn't exist, then I should just agree with Jeff here on the Antimatter Radio Show. That's nice, but you're making a mistake. What you want to do is you want to go and sit in that closet and pray for 12 hours, like I was talking about a little while ago, or you want to go to the forest and practice Zen meditation for a couple days or weeks, and you want to see it. You want to have an experience, a crystal clear, piercing experience of the light energy that is everything. And then you won't need to deny it or try to get yourself to believe anything or anything. You'll just see it crystal clear. You'll know that there's something far greater than this reality. And when I used to teach in the university, I taught a class called Buddhist Philosophy and then another class called Religions of the East. And we'd always start off those classes with a section called the natural person. And what the natural person was is a person who ignorantly thinks that what is real is matter. They see with their eyes is more or less what's real. So what you see is what you get. They think that the common sense view of reality is reality. Okay, and what we describe that person is a person that's filled with confusion, violence, hatred, and sadness. Okay, and if you think that that's not true, you think that that's an exaggeration, you think that's horrible, well, then I would just invite you to just observe the world around you. Turn on the news and observe all these wars that we're in and all the genocide going on. And all the dog-eat-dog, cutthroat corporate monopolism where people chew each other up and spit each other out. Okay, that's ego consciousness. There's a compassionless consciousness of greed and unhappiness. All those people that carry out that consciousness, if they would stop for a second and turn their eyes that they use to look at the world and turn them on themselves and look at their own consciousness, they would see that they're not satisfied. There's nothing that they're doing that they really want to do. They're just chasing someone else's dream. They're chasing money to buy crap that they don't need, to paraphrase something from a line from the movie Fight Club, wonderful movie. But people don't do that because we are an outward-focused culture, not an inward religious spiritual culture. So people don't do that. An outward-focused culture is a disaster. It's a culture of super violence. It's a culture of super ignorance. And you know, if you listen to me on the Alex Jones show yesterday or Truth Jihad Saturday or the previous broadcast of this show, or just listen to Len Horowitz later tonight, I mean, we give all kinds of examples of how this culture is just oozing with shocking ignorance. It's just unbelievable. I really can't even, I just sit around and sometimes just marvel over and over about how I can't believe it. I mean, the power of denial is just staggering. Humans can be taught to believe what they're told, and they can be taught to reject what they see. You know, an extreme way to put it is you can teach people, if you teach someone the sky is green, and you get everybody in a room to agree, and everybody says, oh yeah, yeah, the sky is green, yep, then everybody will agree that the sky is green. It's unbelievable. But the sky, if you just use your eyes and look straight up, you can see, oh no, the sky's not green. It's going to be either blue or white. If there's hazy clouds or big thunderstorms, will make it gray, but it's not going to be green. So, I mean, good examples of how you can train people to believe that the false reality is the true reality. By the way, that's the textbook definition of brainwashing, to get people to believe the false reality is the true reality. You know, just think of the Iraq War. I mean, the media, the big media, the big money media controlled by the New World Order, created that for us. And they told us all this garbage about how, we've got to fear this, nation that doesn't even have a military. they're doing the same thing now. They're telling us, oh, the economy is, we're at the bottom. Everybody should buy stocks, and, happy days are here again soon. But we just lost the auto industry, basically. I mean, we're losing the car dealerships. Unemployment numbers are staggering. Everybody and their uncle is working for a company that's laying off a huge percentage of their workforce. And the effects of all the things I just listed haven't even set in. So why on earth are politicians telling us, and the TV liars telling us that things are getting better? There's no evidence at all except fabricated junk or insignificant things that pale to what I just listed. That they're using to say that the economy is getting better. This is what's called a sucker's rally. Okay, it's where people, the stock market has crashed and there's all the things listed going on, but people won't look at it. They're just simply told on the telescreen, the mind control box called the TV, that things are getting better, and they'll just simply believe it. Ah, okay, I'm gonna. Yeah, I mean, I could give so many other examples of this, but in general, the human race is in a situation where they are just believing what they are told, and then they're not believing what they experience. Okay, so that's the definition of an unscientific culture. An unscientific culture rejects what they're told and trusts what they experience. That's also the definition of a religious culture, by the way. Scientific culture is the religious culture in the true sense of each of those words, but we're so far from those that we don't even really know what they are. So, the amazing thing about television is you can have, it's obvious we were lied to about the Iraq War. And we were lied to over and over and over for, 15 months. Actually, it's all the way back to the 1990s. They told us Saddam Hussein was a threat, way back in early, 1991 or so. And we were lied to for, 13 years? But what does the American do, the typical American? They just turn the TV back on and then just believe the exact same liars over again. I mean, it's a very, very sad case. I can't help but laugh. It's just unbelievable. It's a very sad situation of how pathetic that is. We've got these brains on our head that are just simply not being used. And I'm not saying that as a figure of speech. I'm saying that literally. These brains that we have are portals that our consciousness uses to realize itself in material reality and the spiritual dimensions as well, that we discussed a couple minutes ago. But if you're spending your life working at some job that robs your soul and that you hate and takes you away from your children and your family and so forth, and then you spend your time after that work watching the mind control box called the TV, you're going to have a dormant brain. It's not being utilized. If you put them in a dream state or give them some psilocybin mushrooms or other productive religious plants like Damiana tea or something, or peyote. The activity in the brain is unbelievable. To my knowledge, scientists don't even know what to make of it. It's so active. There's so much activity in the deep dream states or in the deep meditation states. There's a good book called Zen and the Brain. Oh, man, who wrote that? Here it is. By a guy named Austin, published by MIT Press. I've read significant parts of this. And basically, deep dream states, religious states, through meditation or shamanic spirit quests, or through the psychedelic states, all produce staggering brain activity that people don't even really know what to make of it. The brain is just on fire with activity, just all kinds of brain waves and amazing things happening. Now, compare that to the poor foolish slob drooling in front of his TV. I've got a book coming out. Actually, I've got to talk about that. I've got a couple books coming out. But I've got a book coming out in a couple months called The Telescreen. And the subtitle is The Empirical Study of the Destruction of Consciousness in America. And it discusses in there how the television, if you're watching television, you have a certain brain state, which is basically near sleep. In the book, I think I humorously say it's near death. but of course, it's not really true, I don't think. Just compare that to the Zen monk meditating with brain activity that is just on fire, pun intended. And the contrast is truly unbelievable. So let me talk about these books a little bit. I have not even gotten to the topic of the night, Human Origins. We'll get there in just a second. Just so much to talk about. We've all grown up in churches that have lied to us, and schools that have lied to us, watching televisions that have lied to us, and all these institutions tell the same lies, and all the lies agree, and nobody knows the truth. That's a paraphrase of something out of early in Orwell's 1984. Incredible book. All of you should read it if you haven't. So, you know, who would ever believe that it's all a lie? But it is all a lie if you just take your experience and see what your experience reports and then match it to the reality everybody's talking about. You'll see that the two hardly ever match up. Humans are walking around telling each other lies, telling themselves lies. Now, again, let me just going to reiterate, that is, I gave you the definition of science. The definition of science is taking your experience and seeing what it tells you about reality and then putting down on a paper a map of that reality, and then after that you can perform experiments on it. And so that is I think in the academic institutions, unfortunately, these days science goes the exact opposite direction. You'll be told a theory, and then people will try to find evidence for the theory. And, you know, evolution, of course, as I talked about in the last show, I gave specific examples of this with evolution and how it's, that's not science. That's, wouldn't even say it's philosophy. I would say it's, brainwashing. You're specifically trying to push a fad or a theory and if anybody comes up with an alternative view, you castigate them. You know, anybody in the university trying to push non-evolutionary view is castigated as being just almost an insane person. The same would be the case for other theories. I mean, imagine if someone tried to push the theory of the Big Bang. That theory was wrong. Now, I mean, there's really not a whole lot of evidence for that theory either. Tell you the truth. I mean, we know that if we look out in space, we see the galaxies are in, you know, 9 of 10 of them or so are moving away from each other. Big deal. You know, what is that? You know, we've got then this thing called the cosmic background radiation, which does show that long ago in the universe, parts of it or something, or the whole thing, were at a super high energy state. These don't, strictly speaking, lead to this idea of the Big Bang. Now, I personally kind of like the Big Bang theory. The evidence is a little bit lacking. I'd like to see a little more, but I think it's an elegant theory, so I've tended to like it through the years, just for aesthetic reasons. Let me think of some other theories take the Oort cloud, or solar system, like 10 theories popped in my mind, solar system evolution. And there's all these theories about how solar systems form, given to us by astronomers, and they're quite straightforward. They really make sense. The problem is their theories. We don't see solar systems out there forming where we can, you know, if you go through a forest and you see a tree growing, you see a little seed, and then you see a little seedling, and you see a little tree a foot tall, and then one 5 feet tall, and then the big one, and then one that's fallen over, and one that's rotting. So you can kind of put together what's going on. You see the different stages, and you kind of can figure it out. Now, we need to see, you know, lots of stages of that going on in the universe of solar systems forming to piece together what exactly happens, and we don't have that evidence. So solar system formation is it's elegant how they talk about how the gas clouds compact through gravity and start swirling around. It does seem almost so simple that it would just have to be the case, but the problem is a theory. And I want all of you here's the bigger problem with solar system formation theories that we're given. We're basically told that they're not done through intelligent design. We're told that they're random and spontaneous, and they have no evidence of mathematical structure that would be anything but random. But the problem is that that's not true. That's an assumption given to us in the universities. They just don't cover the fact that there's just staggering. I'm pulling a book off my shelf right now which covers this issue. There's just unbelievable signs of design. Something designed the solar system. Something designed things like our DNA. The reason why, because here's why. You should go listen to my show from Alex Jones yesterday. About halfway through the show, I really get into this for just a couple minutes, and I encourage all of you to go listen to that. It's so I won't talk about all that right now. But let me just say this. When we go and measure things like the diameter of the sun or the distance of the earth to the sun or the moon to the earth or diameter of the moon or diameter of Jupiter or the sun to Jupiter and so forth, we get these strange things where the same kind of numbers keep showing up. Numbers like 720 or 3.66666 repeating or 888 or 528 or and it's so stunning how these numbers just show up. It instantly starts to look as if there has to be design in the solar system. Now, all of you should go read. The best book I know of on this subject is called Beginnings, The Sacred Design by Bonnie Gaunt. I was kind of onto this when I picked up this book by Bonnie Gaunt. It's G-A-U-N-T, Bonnie Gaunt. The book is published by Adventures Unlimited, one of the greatest publishers, in my opinion, there is today. But this book on the first, around page 20 to 90, she covers all these issues. Like on page 23, it's just incredible information. 24, 25, 26, right in there. If you read the book, long story short, if you read the book, you'll see that, A, there's obviously something designed in the universe. The solar system is not random. And B, why isn't this in the universities, this information? Why isn't this in the news? Why isn't this on TV? Why aren't the churches talking about this? And the answer to that is, I'm just going to tell you what the answer is. And you can go read my book, Corporatism, Secret Government of the New World Order, which is published and out. You can buy it on Amazon. The reason is because the whole world is run and controlled by a satanic world government. It has been for thousands and thousands of years. They've got control of all the religions, all the universities, all of the media, and therefore all of information and thought. And because, you might wonder, how can they control all of thought? Well, think about what you think about on an average day. It's probably stuff that comes from TV. You go to work and you think about the TV shows that you saw, and you go to lunch and you read the newspaper and you think about that for a couple hours, and you go home and watch more TV. So, yeah, your consciousness is created by, for the average person, your consciousness is created by big media, which is controlled by this group I just mentioned. So if you doubt they exist, you can go listen to my show on Truth Jihad last Saturday with Kevin Barrett, or I can just sum it up in a couple of seconds here. There's non-governmental groups out there in the world like the IMF and the World Bank and the UN. The UN does not consist of all the leaders of the world. That's just a front. If you go look at what the UN really is, it's composed of all these subcommittees and groups and all these people. It's like, where do they all come from? All these groups you can bring up, like the World Trade Organization, they're not part of any country, but they all work together and they control all the governments of the world. And amazingly, all the governments of the world allow this. And there's a couple, the couple of countries that don't allow it, while they're just attacked by the U.S. military, for example. That proves that there's this secret government behind all the governments. And when you really look into it, this group is not a fun group. They're not, they are out to, make humanity as dumb as possible, to not know what they are, to think that they're just a bunch of animals rather than spiritual creatures, and on and on and on and on and on. I would just, if you want to know more, I'd invite you to read my book, Corporatism, The Secret Government of the New World Order, published by Progressive Press. You can buy it on Amazon, and it's, 400 some pages of everything you could ever want to know about this group. So anyways, we're supposed to be talking about the human origins, so let me get to that in just a second. But first, let me tell you about this show and myself and so forth for just a minute or two. This show is called Antimatter Radio Show, and its website is antimatterradio.com. That's under construction. The show's new, and it's just being built up, so a lot of this is just under construction and so forth. You can, from that site, on the left-hand side, you can get to all kinds of other information, such as all the books that I've written. Actually, I have another book coming out. My publisher tells me it's going to be out in 2 days, on Thursday. It's called, I think that, well, it might be a couple days after that, I would guess. But the book is called Telementation, and it's basically about how this, all the religions of the world discuss how consciousness creates and can control physical reality. Okay? Now, I know we're told the opposite in our world. We're told that, oh, no, you know, reality kind of happens and you're a product of it. But that's not what the world religions teach. Jesus said, I can, you know, you can move mountains with your faith. In Buddhism, they just straightforwardly say that consciousness creates reality. In Hinduism, they do as well. Physical reality we're talking about. So anyway, the point of this book, Telementation, is to teach you how to do meditation very simply. And then also to teach you that, well, if you want to control physical reality, you can just go ahead and do it from religious consciousness. And it teaches you basically how to shape reality with your consciousness. And I know that a lot of you probably want to giggle and think this is silly because it's not what you heard on TV. It's different from TV. And go ahead. I'm not going to try to convince you otherwise. All I'm going to say is that this is in agreement with quantum physics, of course. The world of religions, the quantum physics agree on this point. And it's a simple technique to learn called telementation. And I recommend all of you do it. You can acquire tremendous amounts of money with this. You can get people around you to be filled with happiness and peace. You can acquire safety and knowledge for yourself. And it's pretty much limitless. The only things you can't do really is do things that are impossibilities. And my guess is, for reasons I give in the book, it's probably not possible to do harmful things to other people, for reasons I specifically have sort of in the first, about a third of the way into the book, which are pretty interesting. So to sum it up, why you can't is because if you're in a state where you're actively and deliberately controlling reality with your consciousness, that's a religious state of, that's a spiritual state. And you're filled with happiness. And if you're filled with spiritual happiness, that's called compassion. Okay, and compassion is a state of love for other creatures, including even animals. And, you really can't will harm onto other people in that sort of a state, so it's impossible. And a telementational meditative state, as described in my new book, to harm other people. So it's just when you read the book, it's just, if you don't mind me saying, it's just wonderful that this is who we are as people. This is what we're destined for, and it's amazing how little we know of ourselves and how far off track we are. And it's amazing the powers that we have, how nobody knows about this, and what we could have as a species, as a human culture in worldwide and all cultures within the whole human race. We could just have so much, but we just don't know. I mean, our knowledge has been stripped from us. I mean, the Indians, the Native Americans in America, I mean, they live on reservations now, and they have big screen TV to watch football in many cases. I mean, they used to be, you know, 300 years ago, 200 years ago, 100 years ago, they were out in the plains. They knew all about the medicine plants and so forth, and they had religious rituals. I mean, there's no more people more alive in the history of humanity than these people. Now, I realize that, of course, many of the Native Americans are still just as much in touch as their ancestors were. But what I'm referring to is there's so many that aren't, and they were forced onto these reservations. They're still there, and the living conditions are still, most cases, are pathetic. But anyways, I mean, we've lost our skills of farming. I mean, we depend on grocery stores. We go buy this toxic food that's not even healthy for us. It's been radiated and filled with chemicals and all this. I mean, we could grow it for free in our backyards, but we don't have the skills or the time, or most people would rather just sit around and watch TV. I mean, it may be easy to go sit in front of your TV. It may be, you may be tired at the end of the day, but I can guarantee you going and starting your own farm or taking an hour to meditate or read, you know, one of the most incredible books that can just show you how reality really is. Those things will make you feel satisfied. It may be easy just to grab the pizza and beer and sit on your couch and watch the mind control box for an hour because you're too tired to do anything else. But you won't be satisfied. You won't be intelligent. You won't feel like a human. You'll just be a confused person pushed around blindly by the forces of life. Whereas if you were practicing your the things that you're destined to, you know, which is to be a scientist and to be a spiritual, meditative person, those things will give you happiness, and you'll be a good parent. You'll be a good mentor to people. You'll be filled with incredible intelligence. It'll just come to you. And I mean, all this intelligence is inside of us. I mean, that's one thing. When you really get into spiritual and religious consciousness, I mean, information and knowledge comes into your mind, and you wonder, where is this coming from? It's like it's already in me. It's like my ego consciousness, my consciousness that thinks that matter is real and is, you know, chases after matter and material items all the time. That consciousness clouds everything. When you get to the deep inner true consciousness levels, which are really what you are, they're filled with all this incredible intelligence, and you become this brilliant person. Everybody should watch the movie K-PAX. K-PAX, if you haven't seen it. This movie's about that, to a large degree. It's a really an excellent movie. It's a Buddhist film. And it's well done. This show is the Antimatter Radio Show, antimatterradio.com. And I hope all of you will pick up my new book coming out called Telementation to learn this. But we need this spiritual power as a human race. I mean, we're entering revolutionary days. I just gave you reasoning a little while ago for why we are not, you know, happy days are not here again economically. We're just at the beginning of something really nightmarish. And I gave all the reasons for that about 20 minutes ago, so I don't need to repeat it now. I mean, we need to relearn how to live as humans, and to relive as how we live as humans is you don't go to the grocery store, buy a bunch of poisoned food, and then go home and watch TV. I mean, that's a pretty sad case right there. What a human is the Native Americans out on the plains doing a rain dance. Why did they do a rain dance? Well, because a rain dance is the whole group believing to the deepest core of their being that it's going to rain. And that's telementation right there. Your inner, deepest inner consciousness holds a belief that reality will be a certain way. And according to quantum physics and the world religions, reality will be shaped that way. Reality is shaped by the observer. Reality is shaped by the true person, not by the ego consciousness, which is just filled with fear, creating a world of fear. And that is what our destiny is. That is what intelligence is. Native Americans creating rain. And they would create rain because they would believe it, they would know that it's coming, and their consciousness would create it. So, again, all of you should learn this art, this skill called telementation. And I would look for my book around Thursday on Amazon. You just check my site as well. And I don't make much money off. It's going to be a really inexpensive little sort of, not a pocketbook, maybe a little bit bigger than that. So it's not like I'm trying to get rich. I just am happy about it. I feel it is something glorious, this book. And I just hope all of you feel the same amount of happiness. I don't need any money. I've got plenty of money. So I'm not trying to make money with this. And if you think that I am, then go ahead and just keep believing. I really don't care. Because what I want is, I'm just interested in information. I always have been. I'm interested in, I want to know what reality is, what it's made of. I'm really interested in spiritual consciousness and religious experience. And I just hope all of you can also gain interest in these feelings, these religious feelings that we all have flowing within us that are can be uncovered from ego consciousness. So, now going to discuss religion here, let's just get into it a little bit and then we'll get into it a little bit more next week. All world religions are what are called ufology or UFO religions. In other words, what that means is all world religions consist of a story where super powerful creatures came from usually it's the sky, sometimes it's under the earth, but usually the sky, and he created humans, and they taught humans how to farm, and they often gave them certain crops like wheat or hemp or millet or something, and they interacted with humans for some time, and then the religious text usually just ends, and then now here we are, and these people we don't see anymore, which is mainly because of us, because of our consciousness being so controlled by the TV, as I have been describing. So the world, I mean, in Christianity, I mean, we know that the creature that came from the sky was God or the angels, God in Christianity created humans. In Hinduism, we've got the Vedic texts, which have all the same elements, and in Buddhism, there's all in the mythological forms of Buddhism, such as Tibetan Buddhism, there's just all kinds of stories about extraterrestrials coming on crafts and ships and interacting with humans and so forth. I mean, you can even go into like the rainforest of South America or the religions in Africa, like the Zulu, and you find the exact same story. And you often even have very similar words, like the craft that the sky creatures came to create humans in the Zulu religion, I think is basically the same word as the craft that came to create that the sky creatures came on to create people in Judaism. I think it's just off by a letter or something. The words are basically the same. So, I mean, there's clear indication that there's all the religions are telling exactly the same story. There's often, you know, a dark side, like there was a battle of the sky creatures in the world of religions, where one set of sky creatures defected and became very sinister and dark, and try to wage war against the original light-oriented, love-oriented sky creatures. In Christianity, of course, that's Satan and hell and all that stuff, and that's the other religions, and typically will involve some of the same. Now, so it's very interesting that all the world religions are in agreement on this, and they all disagree with evolution. And we also found in the first two editions of this show, 4 weeks and 3 weeks, or 2 weeks and 3 weeks ago, that we don't have any scientific theories that the academics have given us for where humans come from. So what we have basically to go with is the theories from the world religions, which show that humans are, they didn't gradually come from animals. They were abruptly created from being modified by animals, or they were abruptly created from scratch, so to speak, by sky creatures. Okay, so the question is, can this theory be correct? Is this theory correct? And the simple fact is that there's all kinds of evidence that goes with this theory. The first bit of evidence is that anthropologists and biologists cannot explain anything about why humans are the way they are. They don't know why that we don't have hair like monkeys do or other animals do, why we stand up, why we have such complex language that's so overtly used, why we have such interesting sexual patterns, why we walk on 2 feet, or most other animals don't walk on 2 feet. There's all kinds of things. They just can't explain anything in terms of any evolutionary theory or any other theory, period. Okay, but if you read a book called Mankind, Child of the Stars, written by, I think it's Max Flint, and then there's another co-author, I forgot his name. I think on the beginning of that book, there's somebody commenting saying that that's the most important book since Darwin. I mean, if you go through that book, just a couple pages in, you realize that this book is very serious. And all of us have been tricked into thinking the evolutionary theory is right. And all the deficiencies of the evolutionary theory are basically solved or eliminated by a theory. You can call it the theory of the star creatures being responsible for human origins. It explains absolutely everything. All the mysteries that the theory of evolution can't explain are explained by the star creature theory. So this is just extraordinary. And again, just to repeat, it's just so astounding that all of our academics, not only will they not go along with any theory about this theory, this evolution hoax, this natural, humans from chimpanzees hoax. If you just go try and go walk up to an academic sometime and bring up the alternative theory, which is really the right theory, that I'm bringing up here, this theory of the star creatures, and you'll see that academic turn into a little child. They'll laugh and mock, and, oh, that's quackery, or that's just crazy. And they'll act like you're mentally ill. See, that's how people act when they don't have evidence, okay? You ever seen someone try to get a point across where they get really mad and start yelling and banging their hand against the table? That's how people act when they don't have evidence. When they want you to believe your point of view by their intimidating gestures of getting all angry and so forth. Okay? When you have evidence, there's no need to get all mad. You just present the evidence. And if someone wants to, evidence is what you experience. Okay, so everybody knows what evidence is. The wind makes a whistling sound. We all can experience. We all know it's true. There's no debate needed. Okay, there's no critical debate whether the whistling exists or not. We all have this experience of it at least. Okay, so the academics, are not. It's just they will tell you they're operating on the level of science, which is synonymous with saying the level of experiential evidence, but they're simply not. I challenge all of you to go find an anthropologist or biologist tomorrow and ask them, give me the evidence for evolution, and then they'll give you the two bits that I gave you on the other two shows, and then you can refute those with the information I gave you, and then say, well, all your deficiencies with evolution are explained by the story that's given in the world, all the world religions, which are all in agreement with each other, and they'll laugh and they'll just make fun of you because they'll act that way like a little child because they simply don't have any evidence. If they had evidence for you, they could say, ah, here's my evidence to show why you're incorrect and why your theory is wrong and blah, blah, blah. But they won't do that because they simply don't have any. Okay, but they're, on TV we're told that the academics are the smartest people and so forth, and, nobody's supposed to believe this, that the academics are basically just a fad-driven group working for big money is what they're doing. And all of you academics out there know exactly what I'm talking about. Well, I think we're almost out of time here. I want to thank everybody for listening. We didn't get too much into the subject. We'll keep going. There's just too much to discuss. We'll keep doing it every week and eventually get this show up to more time, maybe a couple times a week. And again, thank you very much for all listening, and I hope to have you here again next week.